Come on, shake your body, baby. Do the conga. I know you can't control yourself any longer. It's the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
Welcome to the biggest show on earth. This is the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, a weekly roundup of complaining, talking about superheroes, comic books, music, whatever else is on our mind. He's Mike, and I'm Clifton Manicotti. How are you, man?
Yes, Clifton, it's always good to have you here on the program.
What is new? Have you been traveling like crazy?
You know, I am out and about quite a bit. I'm going to be out and about this weekend, for example. I'm up in Rochester, New Hampshire. Next weekend, I'm in Tampa and Orlando with Chikara. You can read up on that at chikarapro.com. So I am out there quite a bit, traveling probably more than I have in the last couple of years. I got to get out there and see these great United States of ours. And you're going back to New Zealand soon, right? Like, that's tomorrow?
No. Planning another trip. I'd like to go back in a few months. So I know it's kind of crazy, but I'd like to take the wife and kids there if I can at some point. So That's on the docket. However, I just...
that should be pretty inexpensive.
Right. Well, I will be staying with a friend, so that'll be a huge... that's a huge sunk cost right there when you got to pay for the hotels, right?
I don't know. Are New Zealand hotels costly?
Well, I mean, I know that let me see how... I don't know how far a dollar goes there, but it's certainly not very far. When I exchanged some cash, and I usually don't do that. I have one of those credit cards that there's no exchange rate fee. Mm-hmm. You know, when you use them, there's no fee for using them in a foreign country. So I use that Capital One Venture card when I travel like that. But then sometimes you need some cash for taxis and other things like that. So I think I transferred like $200, mm-hmm. or exchanged it, and it ended up being like $170, $160, mm-hmm. something like that. And then when I switched it back, I had a remaining like $80, and I got like $47 back. So yeah, it is expensive. It certainly is expensive there. I'm not sure, because it was a bulk cost for me when I went there last time. I don't know how much the hotels are, but probably pretty pricey. I'd like to go back there. We were up in Mystic, Connecticut this past weekend.
Oh, that's an interesting place.
Have you ever been up there?
Yeah, some time ago. Not any time recently, I don't think.
Very beautiful little fishing town. Of course, my sister lives up in that neck of the woods up in Connecticut.
I thought she lived on the West Coast. What happened there?
She was out there temporarily. You know, her husband's in the military, or an arm of the military, so they move quite a bit. Now they're
right. She married Flint from G.I. Joe.
Right. I mean, he's constantly moving from base to base. You never know when he's going to get called in to have to deal with Zartan.
That's right. After the pit was moved, where was it? Terre Haute, Indiana? They moved it out of there. Who knows?
You never know. Mm. So it was a lovely, lovely town and a little fishing village. I got up early, went out and shot some photos and such, like sunrise and on the water down there. Very beautiful lighthouses. And then we went to Stonington, Connecticut, which is just up the road, another exit or so. And it was very beautiful at sunset there along the water. And I get pretty close to Rhode Island. You wrestle up in Rhode Island, though, up in that neck of the woods sometimes, don't you?
I have. In fact, I think later this year I'm going to be in East Greenwich, Rhode Island. So, yeah.
Very, very picturesque. So, yeah, we'll be there. And then we're going to go see the Phillies spring training down in Florida. But after that, I am not traveling for a while.
After all of that. I'm taking a month off before we go to New Zealand.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't have any plans. Although South by Southwest is going on right now, and all of my friends are heading down to Austin, Texas for the big South by Southwest conference. Do you guys, does Chikara do any South by Southwest stuff? It seems like with the digital age, how important South by Southwest would be. I don't know, maybe next year for you guys. I don't know. It seems to be getting...
I feel like I don't really understand what that is. Do you want to explain to me what that is? It's where Southwest Airlines gives out peanuts, right?
Right. So it started out a number of years ago. I think it started out a number of years ago as the film film conference down there, or the whatever you call it. What am I trying to say? Conference.
Festival?
Festival, yeah. Film festival, basically. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
And then the digital portion of South by Southwest emerged alongside of it, sort of piggybacked off the back of it.
Okay.
So, you know, the film festival portion still takes place. Oh, no, I guess it's the music. I'm sorry, music and film. So mostly it's like we're all new, you know, like upcoming musical acts would really try to jump on board and get some notice and traffic and, you know, And there's inside some of the halls, you go and see these films, much like the way you would go to Sundance Film Festival. Mm-hmm. You see some of these new documentaries, new films. They try to make a splash there. And, then the music portion of it, I think, came along next. And so all these bands, and I used to listen to NPR, does some great coverage down there. The All Songs Considered podcast, boy, Bob Boylan, he is an incredible guy. And the team go down there and they record a lot of these concerts and a lot of these shows down there at South by Southwest. So a lot of new musical acts you'll get to hear pop up on NPR's podcasts, and they do a lot of interviews with the artists and such. So it's a very important place for musical acts to take off and gain traction with the record labels. Mm-hmm. And I think the digital portion of it emerged like a few days prior to the music portion of it. So it's really a tale of two conferences, because you go down there, if you're there for like the digital experience part, you've created an app. It's not a lot of hardware manufacturers. It's a lot of software folks. Mm-hmm. You may have people who've developed an iPad app, or they've got some sort of some sort of website, or they've got something going on like that that they want to let people know about. And you go to parties, you socialize, and you try to talk to the right people to get your app into the right hands. And then there's also, in the conference halls, there are competitions where you almost like Shark Tank, where you have to go up and like pitch yourself in front of a whole group of people who then can get you funding. Mm-hmm. There's a group of like venture capitalists all sitting there in the room, and they're listening to these pitches. And last year, I interviewed a couple of folks who were in some of those intense. They only have like 5 minutes to get their pitch across. And I interviewed one CEO of a company called Votify, which he created an iPhone app, and I guess it was on Android as well, that enabled you to learn about polling places, issues, and so forth among the candidates, and not just presidential candidates, for all sorts of regional elections. And I'm not exactly sure what the app did. But when he showed it to me, I remember being impressed. He ended up winning, I think, or coming in. He was about to go to the final round. So I think some VCs were pretty impressed with that. Last year, there were a couple of big apps that it's funny. I think about the apps that were like, that came into, Twitter really came into presence at South by Southwest.
I was reading about that like the popularity of wanting to do instantaneous reporting from there is kind of what gave rise. Like there was a South by Southwest weekend that really like put Twitter on the map, because that was the service everyone was using to communicate.
Right. And I remember, my friend Gary Vaynerchuk, our mutual friend, he would, he'd be down there. He just would like tweet out, hey, and you'd use hashtags, right? So it'd be like South by Southwest 2008 or whatever it was, and 2009. And you'd say, he would just be like, hey, I'm going to meet over here at this barbecue place. Anyone want to meet up? And he'd like, there literally hundreds of people would just descend on this barbecue place. I mean, it was like the immediacy of Twitter at a conference like that. And so people were like, well, how relevant is Twitter going to be when you're not at South by Southwest? And that's really the great question of South by Southwest. Last year I was there, and there was an app that I was using that was sort of had all the buzz. There were a couple of like social Twitter style apps that let you know who was around you, who was nearby. Mm-hmm. And there was an app called is it Sonar? I think it might have been called Sonar.
Read Quick?
I wish. There was an app called Sonar, and then there was another one that was down there. And they were both doing basically the same thing. They would connect to your Facebook account. And then you could, based on your location, see the five friends that were nearby. And you could like ping them within the app and be like, hey, you want to grab lunch? I've got some time in between this session. You want to go grab some coffee, whatever. And, it certainly had a lot of buzz, people talking about it. Those were the big deal. I don't know that anyone's using it anymore. So it's the great question, right? Can you make waves at South by Southwest? And then can it translate post South by? Foursquare is one of those, right, that had a lot of success at South by Southwest. People checking in on Foursquare, checking in at this coffee shop, and then other people could see their check-ins and go meet up with them. Your friends are at this coffee shop. They've been here. And of course, Foursquare exploded outside of South by Southwest. But some of these other apps, I think, just die on the vine, and they just end up being lame. Mm-hmm. I think one that came out a few years ago from there, 2 years ago, might have been an app called Color, and that just totally tanked. And it got millions of dollars in venture capital money, and it just tanked. I think, my God, who are these VCs that just end up like throwing that kind of money at something like that?
Right. Who are they, Clayton? Can you get me their info?
Right. Can I get you their phone number? Because I got a wrestling company that really...
I would like to tell them about this place.
Hey, coming up a little bit later in the show, we are going to give away... What are we going to give away, Mike? Why don't you tell the fine folks?
I'll tell you what we're giving away. We're giving away a Nexus tablet device. This is made by Google, Clayton. Did you know that? I thought they were just a search engine.
Well, it's actually made by Asus.
It's made by Asus, the Anus USB company?
No. Our good friends at Asus have created Asus. They're a great company. They make, of course, a lot of the products that Google ends up branding as their own individual device. So the Google Nexus, phones, and the Google Nexus 7 tablets made by Asus, some laptops as well. So, and we still don't know. They just rolled out the new Chromebook Pixel. We don't even know who made that, I don't think. Oh. But, Google gets to slap their name on the front of it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, this
could be
yes.
Pirates, like the ones that took Walt at the end of season one of Lost.
That's right. You never know. But we're going to be giving that away at the end of the show today. We've already randomly selected the winner. And, of course, you had to enter our Tonks Coffee contest, and that's how you were able to win. So more on that later in the show.
Yeah, I want to thank people who've been checking in with us. Our Twitter handle is Grizzly Bear Cafe for this show. You don't need the egg in it. Grizzly Bear Cafe over there checking in with us since our last program, anyway. Giovanni Galarza let us know about the released images of the new Amazing Spider-Man costume that you and I were looking at right before we went on the air.
Yeah, what do you think of this?
I think it's an improvement. I never understood why they made that weird choice where his eyes were gold-tinted. That seemed like a really strange thing. So it looks like from these first couple photos that have been floating out there, they've corrected that. And I like the look of the mask. The mask is, more to my liking.
They really improved the eyes because the black around the eyes, they even made it more teardrop-shaped and a little bit shiny. Mm-hmm. So, and then, yeah, they lessened the almost like grill-like feature of it. They've lessened that. So it just looks like stark white. Mm-hmm. So they've done a good job there. And also they released pictures of Emma Stone as Gwen. Mm-hmm. You see some stuff in there too of Mary Jane.
That's an Irish actress that's playing her, isn't it?
Shailene. Yeah, Shailene Woodley is Mary Jane Watson. But she looks really, really young. Am I wrong about that?
Well,
she almost looks...
I guess if they're all supposed to be in high school... here's the thing about Mary Jane, and this is my argument against Kirsten Dunst, who, is no longer playing the role, but I hate Kirsten Dunst, so here we go, is that in the books, Mary Jane is a model, right? I really distinctly remember that story, too, where, she was... posing, she was doing a lingerie catalog, and Aunt May found the photos. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, she's supposed to be a sex symbol, Mary Jane.
Right.
And Kirsten Dunst is the opposite of that. Okay, she's this dumpy. Yeah, I just see it. I'm like, no. And I feel like that's got to be whoever they cast to play Mary Jane has got to just knock your socks off when you look at her, right? Because that door's got to open and she's going to say, you just hit the jackpot, Tiger, and your jaw's got to drop. And you know what? That's not the case with Kirsten Dunst. And these first few photos of the new girl playing her, too, I was like, come on!
Yeah, when Mary Jane, when the Kirsten Dunst version of that character said, cheer up, Tiger, I was like, ugh. Oh,
right.
No, she is not. I never found her attractive at all. But this girl, this Shailene Woodley looks like she's 12 years old, almost like she has glasses on, or braces on. So I don't know. She looks a little too young when she's certainly standing next to Emma, Emma Watson or Emma Stone, who's much, much older, it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, but I agree with you.
She has an almost Margot Kidder thing going for her, doesn't she?
Yeah.
You get the feeling Emma Stone's off somewhere smoking cigarettes between the takes.
And is it my turn back on the set yet?
I've been doing this movie for a long time, kid. You got a lot to learn about Spider-Man.
Indeed. I miss Bryce Dallas Howard as Gwen Stacy. I would have so preferred her. I don't know what age she is. Maybe she's too old to play the part. I don't know. But Emma Stone, yeah, she looks weathered. Weathered is what I would say about her. I don't know. And I want to just say this. I don't know any of the people in this movie. I've never met any of them personally. They might be great. They might be charming, lovely people in real life. I'm just telling you what I see on the internet. Also checking in with us on the internet, as ever, loyal member of the Egghead Army, in good standing, Eric Hofstetter checked in with us, Clayton. He sent us a quick photo he snapped of all the Iron Man 3 stuff that's been hitting the shelves. Have you seen any of this stuff out and about?
I'm looking at his tweet right now, and wow. You don't know. In fact, we were over at Target the other day looking for something for my son, and this was not there. It was a messy old shelf that had like an old Iron Man stuff in there. Did not have any of the Iron Man 3 stuff in there. Mm. Nice.
The Iron Patriot stuff is really interesting. The stuff I've seen on the shelves, though, nothing that reveals the Mandarin, although there is a poster out. There's a lot of different Iron Man 3 posters. In fact, one was just found in the last day or two. Have you seen that one of Robert Downey Jr. in the foreground with the seven Iron Man armors flying behind him?
Let me check this out. I saw... Ah, there they are.
Yeah, right. So that.
Now, what's that supposed to be, the seven other costumes? Are those
well,
people...
Well, you know, the other... I would guess. I didn't get a really good look at it. I don't know if it's the up, you know, the Mark 1s through 6 behind him. I don't know what they are. But there is a poster that's just the Mandarin sitting on his throne. And he does look really cool. So I'm optimistic about that. Because, you know, over the years, that guy, he's had all kinds of crazy costumes over the years. You know, he had like this huge crazy green cape and this orange face mask way back in the day. Then they changed him. He had an orange and red costume. I remember during the days when, who was it? Was it Mark Bright or maybe Bob Layton was the guy doing it? Like, they would always draw him, like, he looked like the devil, and he had crazy, like, blue hair. Like, this is very believable, you know? Like, you can see where they drew the influences from various looks of the Mandarin in the comic book, and yet they sort of rooted it in the real world, which is cool.
Can this, some people are arguing, hey, can this break the third movie curse for, you know, superhero films? Most of them have, you know, you get like Spider-Man, the Sam Raimi third Spider-Man was pretty bad.
Yeah, not my favorite.
But I think some movies have already broken that curse, right? I think Toy Story 3 was excellent.
I don't think of that as a superhero film.
No, true, but if you, I don't know, I guess maybe just like third film curses. When you look at like Superman, you look at Godfather, right? The first two films won Best Picture. The third one was kind of a stinker. Spider-Man. I think most, if you look at most of those, like the third one is kind of they're just kind of riding on the backs of the earlier success. But Toy Story 3, of course, was a huge success and you know, critically acclaimed as well. Dark Knight Rises, some people think wasn't as good. I love that film, but some people didn't think it was as, you know, up to snuff as the first two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought it was a fitting end to it. I think both Spider-Man and X-Men 3 really kind of fell short. So I have faith in Marvel, though. They've been doing a great job with their Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I will give them the benefit of the doubt here as they roll into this one. And I don't know. Like, I kind of think of who the antagonists were in the first two Iron Man, right? We had Iron Monger was kind of the villain. Right. And then we had Whiplash. He was kind of like an amalgam. Like, they stole pieces from, like, the Crimson Dynamo. And it was kind of, not that Mickey Rourke is a bad actor or anything like that, but I think we kind of wanted like the heavy hitters from Iron Man, you know?
Yeah, I was not impressed with Iron Man 2 much at all, and I certainly, you know, I did not like the drunk singing scene at his house. I thought that was just, like I said before, you know, there's certain times when you want to, you know, you're able to suspend disbelief, right? In the first film, I was able to, and then it really, when he's like at the donut shop and he's up there on the donut board and then he's singing, you know, he's singing drunk at his house. I was like, oh, it reminded me of that Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, I knew you were going to bring that up.
Doing that dance, you know.
Right, and they like opened with that. That's like the second scene in that movie, and you're just like, no, no. Hey, speaking of, by the way, they have put a release date on the board for early 2015 for the Fantastic Four reboot.
Do we know any of the cast members for that?
No, I think... They just said that the script is done, and they know who's directing and producing, and I think the next thing is casting.
See, now that's an interesting term, right? Because Invisible Woman, I think we talked about this before. I mean, the argument was that she was so good-looking, Jessica Alba,
right?
That she was distracting. I mean, she was distracting from the movie because she was so hot, right? That may be the difference with Mary Jane, right? We need her to be distracting.
Yes.
We need her to be drop-dead gorgeous so that you feel like, okay, now I see why he would really risk his own life to go after Dr. Octopus on the side of a building for this girl, right? Mm-hmm. Because she's just so drop-dead gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
Would you scale a building for Kirsten Dunst?
Right, that's the perfect analogy. If I had spider powers and it was Kirsten Dunst up there, I'd kind of be like, you know, it's kind of time for my latte.
Right, it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
I'm not going up. Who would you scale a building for? This is a good question. We'll throw it out there to our audience. You can find us on Twitter, Grizzly Bear Cafe. I'm going to say, who would I would scale a building for, well, my
for
wife.
For a Klondike bar? Oh.
I'll start with my wife. But then from there, it's all downhill, let's be honest.
The Klondike bar isn't worth the risk.
No, because by the time you scale the building for the Klondike bar, it'll probably be melted in that plastic, and then you get it all melty off melty fingers.
That is the worst, when you open one up and it's already started to turn into a puddle, and you're like, you know, I did all that crazy stuff for the Klondike bar. That's a really dated commercial campaign, by the way, if you don't know what we're talking about. What would you do for a Klondike bar? But would you send us your tweets? Send us at Grizzly Bear Cafe. We'd like to hear what you have to say. I also wanted to say this. We got a couple tweets from Joey Snack Pants. I don't know if you saw this. But after our discussion about the new 52, and that might have been two episodes ago, I'm not really sure. He even pointed out, he said, I stopped buying my $250 plus of comic books because of the new 52.
Wow. And, you know, we're going to have more of the new 52 in a moment because we got a great email from a longtime listener, and we'll tell you about that in just a moment. Jeremy Graves wrote us about the new 52 and a little bit further discussion, and I like his take on it. He says he felt compelled to write to us because a difference of opinion is needed. Time for an email, Jeremy. We'll read that email in moments, but first Mike is going to tell us about our friends over at Cobra.
Oh, I'd be delighted to tell you about our friends over at Cobra Electronics. I like them a bunch. And it is important, if you like the content that we deliver to you here at the Grizzly Productions Network, week in and week out, that you show some support for our great show sponsors like Cobra, right? We would hate to have to be in a position where we would charge for our podcast, and we've never had to do that, and I hope that is always the case. That's because of patrons of the podcasting arts, like our friends over at Cobra. We could not do this without them. So here's what Clayton and I would really love for you to do today. Just take a minute out of your time and aim your browser at cobra.com, and you're going to see there the world of incredible electronic innovations that our friends from Cobra have made and produced into the world for the benefit of people like you and like me, people that live on the go. If you constantly find yourself in the car like I do, you're going to find that they've got all kinds of great navigation and also early warning systems for things like radar detection, laser detection, red light intersection detection, and all that kind of stuff. They won all sorts of industry awards for their Cobra iRadar system. A brand new iRadar is just around the corner, and I'm very excited for that because it is a road trip essential item. They've also made the Vedetta system, which is like an upgraded version thereof that has a lot of features that customers were asking them for. And that's one of the great things that always puts Cobra at the cutting edge in their industry is they listen to what the consumers want in these kind of gadgets, and they give it to them. Imagine that. Isn't that crazy? And that's really just the tip of the iceberg. If you want to browse around, you want to save some money, for example, or maybe you want to buy one and get one for yourself so that there's kind of, you know, gift giving doesn't have to be completely altruistic, does it? On that left-hand navigation, when you go to Cobra.com, I invite you to scroll down until you find the section labeled specials. In there, over a dozen items are always on special offer. They'll offer you deep discounts on their most popular items, free shipping on others. And like I said, there's even some buy one, get one frees in there. So you can load up. Get something cool for somebody else, right? Mother's Day, Father's Day, birthday, graduation, any day. What other days do you give gifts, right? St. Patrick's Day, I'd like something.
Flag
Put something
day.
Crazy in the Easter basket, right? Arbor Day or any old day. If you're an atheist, every day is a holiday. Head over to Cobra.com right now. You'll be glad that you did. And Clayton and I will thank you because without great sponsors like Cobra and another that we'll tell you about a little bit later in the program, we couldn't deliver this to you free week in and week out. It's only possible because of them, and they only love us because of you. Cobra.com.
Did you hear about this beer being watered down? This is such a travesty.
What? Someone put water in a beer?
Well, you know how, if you think of Coors Light, you think, oh, great American company, right? You think Anheuser-Busch, great American company, right? Not American at all. In fact, they, you know, years ago were bought by InBev. So now InBev, I think, is a South African company? So almost all those big beer makers that, you know, claim to be American aren't really. They're all owned by other countries. Coors is top of that list. But there was a whole thing like last week, this whole, social media. This is the power of social media. You know Maker's Mark whiskey down there in the makers of that Maker's Mark bourbon?
Nope.
They I know you're a big drinker, so you know about this. they announced that they, because of the cost of alcohol, they were going to water down their Maker's Mark bourbon down from the whatever proof it was, and they were going to add, you know, just less alcohol content. Well, there was a huge blowback. It was a huge blowback, and they agreed to not do it. Right? They said, okay, we won't do it. So they're going to lower the proof of it. Now there's this lawsuit. Turns out, like, the company InBev, part of this $5 million lawsuit, this lawsuit claims that the alcohol content of these beers is below the stated label due to the addition of water, that they've been adding water all along and that they've not been telling people, and that the alcohol content is lower than what's marketed. I have to think that this goes on more than we know about, not just in alcohol, but just all types of foodstuffs, right? Am I wrong about that?
You know, as you were saying this, I know this is not exactly connected to this, but this was a thing, too, that kind of like, it was a huge raging thing on Twitter about the Subway footlong sandwiches.
Yes, exactly. Right. What was the deal with that?
Right, like, so I don't even know the full deal. It was just like an outrage that they weren't really exactly 12 inches long or something like that.
Right, they were like 11 inches or something. Right. Because we're the fattest country in the world. We need that extra inch.
That should have been like the subtitle of the article. Fattest country in the world proclaims
demands,
not getting the full 12 inches of our meatball Parmesan sub.
Demands extra inch. By the way, right. Have you ever had a Subway bread? It's terrible.
Well, I mean, on the sandwiches I have.
Yeah, I mean, it's like eating cardboard. Mm-hmm. And I love how they say we bake our bread. I don't know. We were driving somewhere, and I saw, you know, one of those neon signs in the window of the Subway, and I think actually it was in New Zealand, and I saw, you know, the Subway there, and I saw in the window it said, you know, we bake our bread here, mm-hmm. And I was thinking, like, maybe that's a novelty to folks in New Zealand, and, you know, folks in New Zealand eat like local fresh good food. So it didn't look like it was a packed house in that Subway in New Zealand, but maybe that's like still a novelty idea in New Zealand, so much so that you'd have a neon sign in the window about it. Because if anyone who understands Subway knows that they get their like bread shipped in like prepackaged, yes, they're baking it there, but it's being like sent in, then they just like take it out of the frozen sleeve and then they slap it in that oven. On those like grilling pans, and then yes, it's being baked there. It's like a McDonald's pie. Mm-hmm. Like McDonald's should put in their window, we bake our pies here.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Oh man, you're making me hungry.
It is true, but it's not necessarily accurate.
Right? I think you're splitting hairs here.
Maybe. Yeah, speaking of which,
it wasn't primarily baked here.
Yeah, that's what the sign should say.
Secondary baking occurs on premises.
We're heating these pies here. It's basically what's happening.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
We went to see the Book of Mormon the other night.
You know, I was actually going to lead with that. Like, instead of reciting Miami Sound Machine lyrics, I was going to say, Clayton, I saw the Book of Mormon this weekend.
Boy, was that funny. I'm not a big Broadway guy.
Oh no?
No,
you're not.
No, but I had a smile on my face the entire time, and I couldn't stop laughing. It was, you know, it was a hilarious send up of, I guess, the entire process of going on the mission work that they do and so forth. But it did have a lot of heart. It wasn't overly cruel in any way, and if anything, there were, you know, some redeeming qualities to these characters who then end up helping these individuals out of a pinch. But overall, very, very funny. I think, was it Matt Stone and Trey Parker, creators of South Park, who wrote it?
Right, because they did a really like razor-sharp episode of South Park where they tore Mormon – they just ripped it apart.
Well, yeah. I mean, it starts off with this sort of like song and dance about – it gives you like a little, like, I don't know, like a 2-minute overview of the Mormon church, you know, the golden tablets being discovered in upstate New York, and this guy, Joseph Smith, you know, who discovers them, and then God appears and he stands there and he explains to Joseph that, you know, you need to hide these because we don't want anyone to ever see them but you. Like, you know, it's very funny. And
it seems real.
Right. And, you know, they just make fun. Like, we're going back to the ancient times of 1823, where... And then they do this whole thing about the American prophet, the American savior, Joseph Smith. So the mission work follows these two kids to Africa. You know, they're longing to go to some place like France or some other place. They end up, you know, getting sent for mission work in Africa. But anyway, the soundtrack is hilarious. I have the soundtrack. I should let you listen to it. But I'd be curious how many of our listeners saw Book of Mormon on Broadway. It was very, very funny.
Who did the soundtrack?
I guess it was written by... I assume it was written by those guys, Matt Stone and Trey Parker, because all the songs are hilarious. Mm-hmm. I guess there's something, and I don't know because I'm not a Mormon, I'm friends with Mormons, but that you have a lot of guilt, right? And so they have a lot of dreams where there's like a lot of guilt dreams, like if you've done something wrong, like stolen something, like you have a lot of guilt dreams.
I don't think that's just Mormons. I think if you steal something, it's very likely that you have guilt over it. But go ahead.
Yeah, perhaps. But maybe, you know, like Catholic, sort of like Catholic hellfire, right? But they, there's probably a lot of that too. But so they have a whole song called Spooky Mormon Hell Dream, where he's having this hellish dream sequence because he admits that he stole a piece of cake out of the refrigerator as a kid. And that his dad asked who did it, and he blamed it on his brother. And so he had a spooky Mormon hell dream, and he goes through and explains the spooky Mormon hell dream. But, like, there are four antagonists in the spooky Mormon hell dream, and there's all these, like, guys dancing around with pitchforks, and four guys pop up. There's Hitler pops up, and he's, like, dancing around, and then there's Johnny Cochran. The whole thing is hilarious. Very, very funny. I'll have to send you the album. But anyway, we were in the subway, and not the subway store, but in the subway, and we were leaving, and there was a homeless person asleep in the subway, and homeless people like bring bags of just trash with them.
Right. Well, that's their stuff, Clayton. Hey, listen, one person's trash is another man's treasure.
Mm-hmm. Apparently. But this woman, guy, I don't know, the person was asleep with her head down, so I couldn't see, but had a whole bag of McDonald's pies.
Oh,
but there were empty boxes of McDonald's pies.
Was this me?
Right. That's what I was wondering. I was wondering, were you asleep on the subway and I didn't
Mike,
know?
Mike, take that wig off.
That's all you eat. And I thought, man, Mike, I'm like, Mike has a lot in common with this person. I really wanted to take a picture of this bag of McDonald's pies. And you would have probably been able to identify like all of the different pie types.
Oh, you betcha.
Yes. But it was a long way of coming around to the McDonald's pie story.
Right. Hey, real quick, this has been on my mind, and, you know, it's not like we don't talk all the time, like at least once a week for 90 minutes. But, you know, that package of Justice League Unlimited figures I sent you, there was a Superman in there, right?
Was there ever? Because that's my son's favorite toy.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because somehow in my process... an additional Superman turned up where there shouldn't have been one. And I was like, uh-oh, did I forget to put it in that box?
Oh, my God. He sleeps with it. No, that's no joke. He asks where it is at all times. He needs to make it sure that, like, when he's sleeping, he has his Mickey. But, like, Superman is perched above his crib, like, looking in to protect him. Mm-hmm. I've made up a story where, like, one day we're just driving. He's like, Daddy, will you tell me a story? And I just made up a story about how this big, bad snowman was attacking a town, and this little family calls for Superman's help. And so, like, every day he asks me to tell him the big, bad snowman story. So now I need to tell him that every night before bed. And he hands me Superman to demonstrate what he does with his heat vision to melt the snowman.
Mm.
And I ask him prompting questions. I'm like, well, you know, he melted the snowman. What's left? And he's like, his hat? You know, so yes, there is that Superman figure in there.
Okay. Well, I'm relieved to know that. I don't know if I ever told you this, but there's a story that I invented for my own son that involves you. Did you know that?
Am I awesome in it?
There's one that you're in that involves the Red Skull, but there's another one where your son Miles is driving a motorcycle on the Autobahn, and he's pursued by a dinosaur. And that one was very popular. There were many retellings of that in my house.
Wow. Yeah, I have to come up with a new one because all he asks me to do is tell him the Big Bad Snowman story. So I've got to come up with some new ones. I've got it down pat. I mean, he knows exactly what the little girl asks for. He knows that he can hear him from way out in space when the little girl asks for help because he's got super hearing. He knows exactly what he says to the snowman when he lands. He says, "Stop right there." He knows all of that.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes the fun is letting them fill in the blanks in the story and seeing how well they remember it.
Yes. So he absolutely loves that. All right, so we said we were going to talk about the new 52.
Okay, yeah, right. We got an email from a listener of ours.
Yeah, and this comes to us from...
from Jeremy Graves, right? He threatened it on Twitter. Us with an email.
Jeremy G. writes us on Twitter, and he says, "Hey, Mike and Clayton, apologize in advance for the very wordy email you are about to read."
Oh, boy. Let me mute you. Go ahead.
No need to mute. I'm listening to recent musings from you about the DC New 52, and I wanted to add a difference of opinion. I'll readily admit that for a long time I wasn't purchasing comics, partly due to the amount available and losing track of the continuity. Ultimately, I essentially gave up because I didn't know where to turn, which was sort of my argument, right? I mean, I sort of thought this is a nice way for people to jump in here. When the New 52 came along, for me it was a breath of fresh air and clarity on where I could restart my comic reading. While I appreciate and understand the argument that erasing previous continuity can be, and most likely is a giant red flag to hardcore fans, do you not agree that the New 52 has enabled lots of people like myself to find a simple jumping-on point without feeling, in some cases, completely alienated? If what Mike has mentioned about potentially scrapping the New 52 is true, I hope they can at least do it in a way that won't alienate someone like myself. Finding a point to bring it back to the previous continuity without that sounds like a very daunting task to me. And he says, with regards to digital comics, as you spoke about the pricing, I now have gone completely digital with my reading using my iPad. I love the guided view technology that takes you through the book panel to panel, though the pricing is annoying at times, with some new books on day one priced at $3.99, the same as the print version. I do wonder why they can't be lower from the outset. I tend to wait a few months for prices to be lowered and or sales to come out on Comixology. The New 52 DC books, for example, tend to reduce in price a few months after they've been released. And he goes on for there. Thanks for reading. I'm not sure if this will help or add anything to the show, but I thought a difference of opinion would be welcome. All the best, Jeremy. Thank you, Jeremy, for taking the time to write us. We are grizzlybearcafe@gmail.com.
That's right. Yeah, so you can take your difference of opinion, Jeremy, and stuff it.
I think he brings up some good points, don't you?
Yeah, right on. Like that has to be why they did it, though. I think he brought up a really good point. It's if you are looking for an entry point into a universe that has such daunting continuity to it, you know, like, I guess I could start with Detective Issue 800, you know, like, I would wager to say that probably the majority of people that are really enjoying the New 52 liked the fresh start. You know, that's probably what either kept them on or drew them back to it, that there was a new jumping on point for a lot of these characters. So I'm sure there are other people out there that would echo his sentiments.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what they do if they scrap it all together. And have we heard anything more on that? Is that confirmed?
I've not heard anything more about that. This is my own personal feeling about it. It seems like those kinds of things, that's inevitably the conclusion of it. Do you remember back in the, I want to say it was like 1986, 1987, when Marvel launched an imprint called the New Universe? Do you remember this?
Right, sure.
It was heavily advertised. They had house ads and all their books for it. Marvel launched the New Universe, and it was maybe, I don't know, 7 to 10 new titles that came out. Star Brand was one of them. There was that. I think it all started with an event called The Pit. I could be wrong. I didn't follow any of it. There was DP7. There was Night Mask. There were others as well in this universe. And it was supposed to kind of, it was like set in a different universe. It was still on Earth, you know, because Star Brand in particular was Pittsburgh based. I remember being kind of excited that there was like a Pennsylvania superhero. But the sales started to drop off, and I think probably by the end of the first year, half those titles ended up being canceled, and a couple more years, and they were all gone. They were just gone, and it just didn't last. It couldn't sustain itself. Now, unlike New Universe, this has all the DC characters, right? I mean, this was a real commitment on their part. It wasn't like, oh, yeah, we're just over here with these four books, kind of like the Ultimates were for Marvel, right? Like, they're continuing that main... Which company is it that calls like their main continuity Earth 626? Is that Marvel?
You're asking.
I'm so far removed from it. But that concept of, like, you know, there's, you know, DC had that going on for a while, right? Like, the main books took place on Earth 1. Then there was, like, the Justice Society and these other characters that were, like, time displaced, and they were on Earth 2. Like, then when they bought another company, like, remember when they acquired those characters from, I guess it was Fawcett had Captain Marvel and his characters, like, they were Earth-S. So, you know, they all had their own little universe to exist in. Well, DC did that with their whole universe. The whole universe is the new 52. So I think you're right, Jeremy, in that it would be really daunting to try and roll that back in. But my feeling is, like, when they did the Heroes Reborn thing in the late 90s with Marvel, where, like, Rob Liefeld was drawing Captain Marvel with – or, I mean, not Captain Marvel, Captain America. And they gave some of those hot image-type artists some of the big toys at Marvel to play with. Eventually, you know, they just had to kind of find a way to neatly roll it back in. You know, like, they had some kind of cosmic eraser-type event that just said, oh – you know, we're back.
Yeah.
And that was that, you know. They've done some really daring things. I give DC a lot of credit. Do you remember, Clayton, a few years ago they did an event called 1 Year Later?
Yeah.
Remember this?
Yeah, yeah.
Where all the books jumped ahead 1 year in continuity. And you were, like, trying to figure out, well, what happened in that missing year? Like, how did, you know, this guy who you know, before was this, is now he's Nightwing. And, the Red Hood became Nightwing. Or what happened, you know... You thought Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon were going to get married. Now Barbara Gordon's gone. Like, what happened there? And although that was a really daring thing that they did with 1 year later, but ultimately, like, did that help attract new readers? Like, did that really help their numbers? Because, like we said on the Grizz, where we discussed this in depth, those companies, Warner Brothers and Disney, who are the parents of DC and Marvel respectively, they don't make their money on the print comics. Like Clayton said, they are no doubt a loss leader for them. And they're really making their money on the licensing to film and animation and toys and every other thing under the sun, and not on the print comic books. And somebody, you know, at Warner Brothers or at Disney, who's got to have, you know, they've got to be that there's a bean counter somewhere. Right. And when the beans don't add up, all of a sudden it's time to roll this back. And there we go. We're right back to where we were continuity wise.
Speaking of rollbacks and throwbacks, you know, Warner Brothers hasn't yet, you know, found a way to make the Wonder Woman series yet, a movie or a TV series work for some reason.
Right. Did you ever see that full pilot? I know it's out there.
No. I mean, I wonder where you could find that. It's not on iTunes or something like that. Was it just – where did it get released?
I don't know. Somebody was telling me, like, it's out there. You know, you can find it if you dig around. And they said, it's awful.
I have to see if we can find it. But apparently there's a fan trailer version of Wonder Woman that's come out. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm, no.
Apparently a stuntman turned director, Jesse Johnson, has figured out a way to at least make this compelling and somewhat interesting. He's a longtime member of the film community, and he wanted to give his hand to some directing, and he made a concept fan trailer for his idea of an epic Wonder Woman movie.
Mm.
And he told Latino Review, it was my manager, producing partner Kelly, Kaylee Marsh's idea to shoot the trailer. She really believes I should be a studio director and thought shooting Wonder Woman would be a great way to show off my skills in a fun way that people could get excited about. So, we'll tweet this out from the Grizzly Bear Cafe account, but you have to watch this trailer. I can't believe how good it looks for just a fan bit. You know, a lot of these things, a lot of the fan style trailers end up being pretty incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of seems to have the Christopher Nolan style to it. It's gritty. It's set in World War II. Mm. And it has Diana facing off against Nazis who have captured her. But she does a pretty incredible job of, like, defeating them. And it's a little bit like Iron Man, you know, when he goes to Afghanistan to take out that guy Raza.
Mm.
But then, you know, because he's a stuntman and he, you know, wants to do directing, he understands the, you know, having excellent stunts. So he did some great casting. He casted this woman, Nina Bergman. What I love about this is that he cast people for this.
Mm-hmm.
This looks pretty incredible. And who knows if it would work for a full-length feature film. But it's certainly a cool trailer. And enough you can, you know, extrapolate this into a larger feature-length film. But hey, if they did it with, I don't know, like I said, if they did it with Iron Man, they did it with Captain America, this looks to be like the perfect road to go down for Wonder Woman to make this work.
Hmm.
So, like I said, I'm going to tweet this out from our account here, and I'm going to send it
That's
over.
That's cool. Yeah, I'd like to check that out. And it is a shame, I think, you know, as the major comic companies become increasingly, you know, giant corporations, right? As we said, owned by Disney and Warner Brothers. Those are big guys. Like, the do-it-yourselfers, I don't know. I don't like your odds, you know? I just I don't see that ever working out for you. I think that's great that people try, but I just don't see it ever working out for you.
It's hard, though. You know, that guy Steven Spielberg, I think, like, hired one of those guys that that made that incredible sort of Aliens Attack short film. It was like attacking, I don't know, was it attacking, like, in, I don't know, it was somewhere in South America.
I do remember that. We talked about that on The Grizz. It was like, it even got some viral stuff going on. But yeah, it was like a home movie that the guy, those pods that were like walkers crushing a South American town or something.
Right, right. And Steven Spielberg, I think Steven Spielberg, like, either bought the rights to it or hired the guy to work for him. So, I mean, maybe there is some salvation out there for people that want to kind of go on their own with this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of some other fan-generated stuff that we've never seen come to fruition, although, like, fans loved it and wanted to see it happen.
Well, you know, before the Nolan Batman stuff, do you remember that Batman Predator fan film that was out there that was, like, awesome? I don't remember what it was called. Was it called Batman Fear or something? Whatever. Well, I'm sure if you, like, put in Batman Predator Alien, it'd probably be one of the first things that comes up on YouTube. I'm just guessing. I don't know that to be true. But, yeah, it was awesome.
This is pretty incredible. I did send this to you, so you got to check out this Wonder Woman trailer. I'm pretty excited about it. And if anything, it could be made into a TV series. It does, though. It even feels bigger than a TV series. The way that this guy directed this trailer, it feels like I'm, like, excited for a movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if I saw this and this just ran while I was in the theater, I would be like, when is this coming out?
Right, right on.
So, did a great job with this thing, man. Good job to that guy.
Yeah, hey, that guy. Are you listening to our show? Way to go.
Now, here, you mentioned Fantastic Four. Now, I'm excited about it because I think doing a reboot and trying to get it right this time could be exciting. Hopefully, they'll fix it, right? I can't imagine they're going to screw it up twice, although they did with the Hulk franchise.
Mm.
So, I don't know. But I'm a little bit nervous that the script is getting polished courtesy of the Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter scriptwriter.
Oh, you know, that did really well at the Academy Awards.
Yeah, Lincoln did. Not Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh, no. Lincoln's the sequel, Clayton. In Lincoln, he chases werewolves.
But the the book was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. The book was a lot of fun. The script and the movie were pretty terrible. I think it has like a 40-some percent on Rotten Tomatoes. So as they opine here, that's not great news for people who thought that the 16th U.S. president's vampire-slaying adventures were a bit over the top.
Come on.
But see, that could be okay for a superhero film, it being over the top. It was a little hard to believe that Abraham Lincoln was hopping on the tops of trains going
out. Hey, listen, Clayton, who knows what it was like back in Abraham Lincoln's time, okay? Were you alive in the year 1200?
That's right. You know, when he was underneath that cherry tree,
mm-hmm.
he never told a lie.
Wow. I didn't know any of that. You're breaking some new ground.
I mean, as the first president of the United States,
right?
He was quite the rail splitter. We don't know.
A rail splitter.
Oh. Anyway. So what else is going on?
Do you know why the Grizzly Bear Cafe account is following the NRA? Because, well, wow, I've seen two of their tweets today, and I'm already sick of it.
I blame you for that. Really? We're following the NRA?
Yeah, man. Oh, I need all this information about why we need assault weapons. You know?
That's weird.
It is. It's strange. We should send those people away. It should be like an island where you go with your guns. That's some deep political stuff I just threw there. What, Clayton, what is a rail splitter?
That's what Abraham Lincoln was known as. He used to be ferocious with his axe. So when he was laying railroad ties, I think for the army.
I see. So this wasn't that's not like a political term, you know, like the minority whip.
No.
Rail splitter is like a real practical thing.
Rail splitter.
I just want to say, too, I don't know what a minority whip is. I know that expression. I have no idea what that means.
Rail splitter.
What do you got?
Yeah, you would typically do this to build wooden logs or for building fences, but also laying railroad ties. Yeah, it's kind of hard to find like exact definition of it, but that's sort of what they're saying. But I know that he was called that. He was referred to as the rail splitter.
I see. I know this is not, especially for you, given your job, this is probably not the thing to do, but I'm going to challenge you to do it. And if you decline, that's okay. I'm not going to be nasty to you about it. I want, both Clayton and I, we're relatively full grown. I don't think I get bigger in the middle, but I'm not getting a whole lot bigger. There are things in the world that I know nothing about. Like, I know they exist, and that is the level of my knowledge. Here's one right now. I understand zero about the stock market.
Okay.
You want to throw one out there? Something you know it exists, but you know nothing about it.
In vitro fertilization.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know much how that works. Like, if you asked me, like, if you needed to get pregnant and you said, Clayton, I need you to do in vitro on me, I wouldn't even know where to start. Would you Google that skill?
Right. Well, I wouldn't. I don't think you and I would. You know, we'd be like, how do we get pregnant because we have the wrong parts?
Right. See, I don't know that. I mean, maybe I could like Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie Junior. I could get pregnant. Right. I could.
Oh yeah.
Remember that?
If it's in a Schwarzenegger movie, I think
it's true.
Right. A lot of what I know about how climate works is gleaned from his role as Mr. Freeze.
That's a good question, though. What else?
And a lot of my snappy repartee also comes from that.
Chill out. And a lot of the witty one-liners. Stick around. From Commando, I think.
Man. Nobody delivers a line with the gravity of Schwartz.
Was it in Commando when he's on the plane with the guy that he ends up killing the guy sitting next to him in the airline seat and the stewardess comes by and he's like, is he okay? And he goes, he's dead tired. He like snapped his neck and he's sitting next to him on the plane. That's the best one ever.
I've never seen Commando. I've never seen Commando.
That's I think Commando may be the king of the one-liners for Schwarzenegger. Like stick around, like he shoots a guy through the head, you know, like an arrow, and he like his head sticks to the wall, you know, and he's like stick around. And then he has a lot of big one-liners. There's one like chopper scene, but no, there's like that might have been in Predator. He has like a really big chopper. There's a get to the chopper. That's
all right. So before we get into too much trouble and reveal our complete ignorance here, I'm gonna I'll escalate this to something else. Here's a movie. And I'll see if you've got one, too, that it's almost unfathomable that you've never seen. I'm going to put this out there. I've started Gone with the Wind 4 times, and I've never finished it. I cannot get through Gone with the Wind. I don't know what happened. I know at the end, there's a scene that's often quoted in other pop culture.
I watched it when I first moved to Los Angeles because I was unemployed and had nothing to do. So I rented it and watched it on DVD. It was like 4 hours long. Maybe that's why you've never watched it. It's that long.
I couldn't make it. Couldn't make it through.
Yeah.
Do you have one like that?
And I'm really embarrassed to admit this. Don't tell anyone.
All right.
Because I was a student of film, and I don't want to know how it ends, and I kind of do, but I've somehow managed to avoid knowing the full plot of this thing, is Citizen Kane. I mean, widely considered the greatest movie of all time, and I, as a film student, never have watched it from beginning to end. Now, I, like you, had started it, and I watched it like in my dark basement back in Reading, Pennsylvania, and I think I fell asleep. I know I fell asleep. So I never finished Citizen Kane. I feel like that's a huge... I'm ashamed to admit that one.
Well, I will keep that under wraps for you.
Good.
I don't want you to worry about that. Let's escalate this to something else as well. A classic album and I'll throw this one out there right now, Led Zeppelin 4. I have never heard that album.
But you probably know all the songs on it, right?
I might, but I've never listened to Led Zeppelin 4, right? If I know it from classic rock radio or whatever, I don't count that.
Stairway to Heaven.
Right, you know, I know some of the songs, but I've never listened to Led Zeppelin 4.
Classic album. Do you know an interesting bit of trivia about that album? They didn't even label it anything because they were so pissed off at like Rolling Stone magazine and other members of the press that they just called it. They didn't call it anything. Actually, it was released. I don't even think it had Led Zeppelin written on the side of it. And so when they released it, the press didn't know how to label it. You know, it's often called, they had some other name early on because there's like a guy carrying like a bushel of barley on his back on the front of it. And they called it, they just called it Four. Or they, you know, they had some other names for it, but they could never come up with a real name for it. Didn't seem to matter though, because it was their biggest selling album of all time at that point. Of course, Stairway to Heaven, as you know, was a pretty popular song.
Yeah, I understand that did well for those little guys.
You would probably appreciate their hatred of Rolling Stone magazine.
Indeed.
Let's see. Classic album that I never listened to or never owned.
Just like an album that's kind of considered indispensable and you've never listened to it. It doesn't matter whether you own it or not.
Let's see. Sticky Fingers. Sticky Fingers, the classic Rolling Stones record. Sticky Fingers, right? Am I wrong in the name of that?
I abstain from everything Rolling Stone, so...
Yeah, I know you're not a fan of...
Not the magazine, not the band. I abstain, so... Yeah. That could be the name of all their albums, Clayton, and I wouldn't know.
Let me look it up, because Sticky Fingers has some songs on it that I think I like. I've just never listened to the album, but it's... When you ever see like them counting down like the top albums of all time, Sticky Fingers is always like in the top 10 of albums, I think. It has that famous Blue Jeans cover where it's like a zipper. And I think when it was originally released, I do know a little bit of the history of this. When that album was released, it had a zipper on the front of it that you could actually unzip on the actual record. I think then subsequent versions of it removed that.
Yeah. It doesn't seem very practical.
Yeah. So... everyone thought it was Mick Jagger in that picture, but apparently it was not. And Andy Warhol apparently had photographed different people that ended up, he was the one who created that. So it was the number one record in 1971. But yeah, Brown Sugar, Wild Horses, Can't You Hear Me Knockin', I Got the Blues. So there's a lot of classic Rolling Stone songs on there, but I've never listened to that album.
All right.
What about books? Because I think
there's like a million books I haven't read, Clay.
And there's books.
There's like a library full of them. I haven't read them.
No, but like classics. Because I think there are books that people admit that they've won't admit that they haven't read. Right? People be like, yeah, I read that in high. You just always say, you're like, yeah, I read that in school. Right. But you probably haven't, or you're just admitting you have, so you can get off. You don't have to talk about it.
I want to give props to, I recently told a story about a concert-going adventure that involved my friend Brad Noe, where he crowd-surfed away an annoyance to my pack of friends and I. And I always admired him. In our English class, I think it was a senior in high school, we were supposed to have read The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand.
Right, right.
I've never read anything by her, and I probably never will, because her books are too long. And we were given The Fountainhead, and the copies we were given were over 700 pages.
Right.
You know, I'm sure you could have printed it on a bigger page and, you know, got that page count down.
Right, sure.
Or diminished the font size. But whatever. The one we were given, it was 700 pages. Now, both Brad Noe and I, we failed to read this. Okay? When it came time for the test, the teacher came around, and she put the test on The Fountainhead on my desk. And Brad, who was seated to my left, she put the test on his desk as well. And he picked the paper up and he just handed it right back to her. And she said, "What?" And he said, "I'm not reading this and I'm not going to read it. Give me a zero."
Didn't he? Wasn't he your class valedictorian, by the way?
He should have been. He should have been.
He was close. He was like second, right?
He really, toward the end there, I mean, like with moves like that, you know, that kind of hurt his overall grade average, I guess. But I always had great admiration for Brad. Still do. Still do.
That's awesome. No, I think there were, I'm trying to think of one like that. I think The Fountainhead is on the tops of my list for a book that I never read. I did read Pride and Prejudice, though. But I'm trying to think. There are those classic. Like War and Peace.
Yes, that is exactly what was coming out of my mouth. War and Peace. That's a great example of that. Like, just the idea that I would need to keep like a separate notebook to track the characters to know what's going on.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'm out. Right. That sounds like too much time.
Now, I tried to, you know, I really wanted to get into Game of Thrones. You know, it's supposed to be excellent. And I know it's on HBO, and of course I'd like to watch the show, but I wanted to read it first. And I'm about halfway through the first book. And I really, you know, I love audiobooks. I don't do them a lot, but occasionally on a drive or when I'm out, you know, at the gym or something like that, I'll listen to them. And I also like to read, straight up regular read. But
regular read.
You know, I guess could you consider listening to an audiobook reading? I know there's some controversy.
I also do some analog reading.
But sitting down, actually listening to a book, my wife and I tried to listen to Game of Thrones on a drive, and boy, there's so many characters. You can't even keep track of it. You need you can't do it by audiobook. You need to physically see the names of the people on the page so that you can have some memory of what their names are. I just, the audiobook format for like Game of Thrones, any complex fiction like that, no way. No way. Mm. And I imagine that's what it would be like with War and Peace.
Right. Yeah. It's too daunting, you know? And sometimes, you know, you just kind of wonder, like, where am I really going to be at the end of this? Like, what do I get out of that?
Right. Am I going to be any better off for having read Tolstoy?
Right. Like, I spent a year, you know, working on this, and I understand where all these characters ended up, you know, all these members of whatever, the Russian monarchy or whoever it is it's supposed to follow. I guess it follows two separate families, right?
Right, right, right.
And that's seriously about all I know about that book. But yeah, when it's over, like, what do I really get out of it? Similar to that, there was a book I started reading a couple years ago. It's called Saturday. It was by, I think the author's name was Ian McEwan. I could be wrong.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
And I started reading it, and it was recommended to me by a friend, actually, by the late, great Larry Sweeney. And I read about 30 pages of it, and I was like, I'm not going to get anything out of this. And I just stopped reading it. Like, I just shut that book, and I'm like, nope, that's one. I've no desire to continue. And then so later on then, like, I read, like, a synopsis of what the book is, and I'm like, thank God I stopped reading that. Because if I had taken the time to get to the end of those 400 pages and, you know, having read the synopsis, understanding that really nothing happens in the book,
right,
I'd have been livid.
Yeah. And Stephen King writes about that in his great book called On Writing, where he says, you know, like, life's too short to read bad fiction or to read, you know, just bad works. You know, if you're into something and it's just not calling to you, put it down. Read something else. There's so much other good stuff out there. Don't waste your time trying to force yourself to get through a crappy book.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it just doesn't speak to you. I felt the same way with Atonement. I don't know. Was that another one of his books?
I don't know the answer to that.
It was made into a movie with, like, Keira Knightley and Jude Law or something. I don't know. But I started to read that, and I just was like, oof, I'm bored. I'm putting this thing down.
Done.
I'm done. I can't handle this. I can't handle this at all. Anything else before we do our big giveaway here?
Right. We do have that big giveaway. Before we get to that, though, I think perhaps we should take a moment and thank our other great show sponsor. So in a moment here, we're going to give away that Nexus tablet device. But before we do, we want to thank Tonks Coffee. Now, over the course of the last, I don't know, month or two, we've both kind of turned into Tonksians. I don't know that that's the right term, Clayton, but I feel cool that I coined it.
I like that. I'm drinking, actually, a French press pot of some Nicaraguan blend that they sent me.
You're drinking the whole pot? Well, I got to dial you back.
Man, I know. I drink. And this is my second pot today.
So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the great folks over at Tonks and the service that they offer?
So people spend thousands of dollars a year going to coffee shops, right? Going to Starbucks, and people's coffee habits are ridiculous when you actually look at the overall sunk cost of buying a $4 latte or a $3, you know, cup of coffee, whatever it happens to be. People are spending a lot of money on going into the coffee shop, and the beans end up not being that good. They've sat there for a while. They don't have the flavor that you're going to get. So what does Tonks do? Well, the guys over at tonx.org are passionate, very passionate about coffee. And what they do is they source the world's best beans, and they make sure that they are roasted and sent right to your door for maximum freshness. So they arrive at their peak freshness. They haven't been sitting on a shelf for long at all. And when you get them, you'll notice the difference. They don't have like that shiny quality to them that you'll see like in other beans. They're fresh and they're ready to be put right in your grinder. You grind them up and you're going to have a delicious cup of coffee. And they are not coffee snobs when it comes to how you actually brew it. You know, I prefer a little French press. It costs you $20. You know, you grind with beans, put it in the bottom of the French press. I put 6 scoops in there, pour some hot boiling water over it, and you put that plunger down. You've got an incredible cup of coffee. We had 2 friends over recently, actually 2 architects who come into the house to do some work here. And we're having a meeting here to go over some different plans and things. And I had made them a pot of Tonks coffee a few weeks ago, and they came back for another meeting. And I said, "You guys want some coffee?" And she's like, "Oh, I was hoping you'd ask." She's like, "That coffee was so good that you made last time." And I said, my wife said, "Yeah, he's kind of a coffee purist." And I said, "Hey, all it is the beans." And I showed him the Tonks beans, and she said, "Oh, I'm gonna have to try this." So it just speaks for itself. Once you have the beans from Tonks, you will never go back. And what's great is it's a subscription service. So you just go to tonks.org and you can try it free. They'll send you a bag of beans to try for free. Just sign up, no purchase necessary, and they'll send them right to your door. And once you try them, then you can sign up for a 2-week plan where they'll send a bag of beans every 2 weeks, or you can sign up for the monthly plan. And we signed up for the monthly plan because it's just, I drink so much coffee. So you'll want to do that, maybe if you have a larger family. Check them out at Tonks, TONX.org. And when you tweet about them, they are at Tonks Coffee on Twitter. Just say you heard about them from us.
Please do. We would like that if you would do that. So, without further ado, we know that you have been waiting. You want to know, hey, and this thing that we're giving away, it's worth a couple $100. This is a nice device. It's not some piece of crap we're giving you.
No, it's a brand new Google Nexus 7 tablet.
We give away good stuff here.
That's right.
Okay.
We do. So what did you have to do to enter?
Oh, you want me to tell?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure there. Sometimes it's rhetorical. So you needed to sign up. You needed to go over to Tonks.org and sign up for their plan there where you get the free first bag of beans. And, of course, chances are once you've had that coffee, you're gonna stay on with the program. I have no doubt about that. You also needed to send out a tweet. You had to make sure you mention all the right people. That way we saw it, and we also needed to verify that the people sending out the tweets had, in fact, signed up for the Tonks coffee. And if you did all these things, you were up and in the running, and then we put everybody into a randomizer program. Those things are amazing.
They are. And the winner is... Do you want to tell the folks who the winner is of our Tonks coffee? Well, it's really the Nexus 7 giveaway.
Right. No, I think you should.
Okay. It is John Bolin, J.W. Bolin on Twitter. John, congratulations. Thank you for entering, and thank you for being a fan of the Grizzly Berry Cafe. You have won, and we will direct message you to get your address and everything, and we'll make sure you get that Google Nexus 7 tablet. Enjoy it.
Yep. If we don't hear from you within 24 hours, I keep the tablet.
Right. He's a lot like that. He does that sometimes. So thank you, everyone, for entering. We'll have some more contests in the future. You know, when we have some extra fun to give away, we will do that. So anything else going on? Or should you call it a day? You really can't top that, can you?
Right. No. Very well done there. So one quick little thing here on our way out the door I want to tell you about. I saw the LA Times published a preview of Michael Nesmith's upcoming solo tour. Clayton and I are going to go see him at Town Hall in New York City in mid-April. But they did confirm one of the rumors going around. He's only going to play one Monkey song. He's playing Papa Jean's Blues, which has been a staple of his since the early 90s. Other than that, he said it will be all his solo material. He said, he had the opportunity to play almost, the lion's share, I guess you could say, of his Monkees written material during last year's Monkees reunion tour. And so he's going to focus on his solo material. Now, the article mentioned 3 songs in particular. Although Nesmith did not, the article mentioned these 3 songs of his in particular. 2 of them are his 2 best-known hits, Joanne and Silver Moon. The 3rd of his best-known hits would be Rio, but it doesn't mention that. It mentions Nevada Fighter, which is really interesting. And if that is somehow meant to foreshadow the fact that he's playing it, I'm thrilled, because typically he does not play Nevada Fighter, and that's one of my favorite Nez songs.
That would be pretty cool if he digs into the bag of First National Band songs and starts playing some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. So in his own vague way, Nez said he's going to pick the songs of his that he feels are his favorites that never get their due, and the songs which are most requested by fans. Now, that, of course, is vague enough that it could mean anything from his solo catalog.
Right.
But I have to believe that, by and large, this is going to mirror the set list that he did in the UK. It's just going to be played with a live band instead of, as he put it, his array of virtual instruments. So he did do some different stuff during that UK tour. He was doing three songs from The Prison, which was cool. He did the opening theme, Marie's theme, and the closing theme, which was very cool. For the first time ever, he was playing Casablanca Moonlight Live, which is part of a diptych on the From a Radio Engine to a Photon Wing album. That's really cool. And he was also doing Thanks for the Ride, which is a First National Band song that I don't think he ever performed live before. I have to think that there's got to be some connection between those UK concerts. I don't think he like reinvented the set list for this new tour of his. I think it's just going to, you know, there might be a couple minor changes, but you know you're going to get, you know, some of Shelley's blues. You know he's going to play Propinquity. You know what I mean? Like, you know he's going to play different drum. There's definitely going to be some songs that are going to be part of it.
Right, right. Cool stuff. I'm looking forward to that. Cannot wait.
Right on. So, yeah, upcoming here on the program, we'll talk about stuff.
That's right. We always talk about stuff. Or as my son likes to pluralize it, he calls it stuff is.
Hmm.
Call it stuff is. Or sheep is.
Hmm, that too.
Yeah. That's going to do it for the show. Please send us your who would you scale a building for tweets.
That's right.
Yeah. Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter. And check out the other shows on the Grizzly Bear Grizzly Productions Network, like the Weekly Long Box. Hey, if you love comic books, it can't beat the folks over at the Weekly Long Box. They are sticking to comic books over the past few weeks. They said, hey, they were talking Star Wars pretty heavy. They went back to talking full-time comic books over the past couple of shows. So good stuff over there, as always. And you can check out the Trending Show, right? That's a Trending Show is the rundown of weekly topics and trends that are happening across the internet. That is hosted by Mike and Natalie.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time. All that and more await you over at grizzlyproductions.tv. And in the meanwhile, catch up with us at Clayton Morris, at Mike Quackenbush, and we'll be back in about a week's time with a whole new Grizz just for you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Adios.